The QCWA Journal is published four times a year, quarterly, by the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated. Membership in the QCWA, including a subscription to the journal, is available to individuals who qualify in the United States and its possessions at the following rates: $25 for 1 year, $40 for 2 years, $55 for 3 years, and, of course, a life membership, $375. The business office is located at P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. The telephone number is area 508-405-1930. The fax number, 508-405-1965. And, of course, you can email the general manager at the following in lowercase, qcwagm@rcn.com. The editor and designer is Douglas Walbridge. He's located at that same business address. The webmaster is Bob Roski and 0UF. His address is 993 Hassan Street, Southeast, Hutchinson, Minnesota, 55350. Telephone number 320-587-3890. And you can email Bob at broske@hutchetel.net. The design of this month's QCWA Journal's cover is very attractive. There are three photographs of the New England Wireless and Steam Museum. It's located at 1300 Frenchtown Road, East Greenwich, Rhode Island, 02818. The New England Wireless and Steam Museum is an electrical and mechanical engineering museum emphasizing the beginnings of radio and steam power. The museum honors engineers who achieved greatness and served the public good by analyzing and solving tough engineering problems. The museum is both archival and educational. Let's take a look now at the officers and board of directors. The president, Bob Roski, N0UF, vice president, Ken Olke, VE6AFO, secretary, Walter Supina, N3WS, treasurer, Frank Harris, WA4PAM, and as regards to the directors, Leroy Baldwin, Val Irwin, Gary Harrison, Tony Hirsch, Larry McCalvey, Ken Simpson, Robert Smith, Ernie Skips Svensson, President Emeritus Harry J. Daniels, call W2HD. From the President's desk, Bob Roski's report to the membership, Spring 2011. The 2011 convention is in Warwick, Rhode Island, the weekend after Labor Day. It kicks off with the Board of Directors meeting on Thursday, the 8th, and concludes with an ARRL headquarters tour on Monday, the 12th. Get all the details and a registration form at the center of this issue. ARRL President Kay Craigie and 3KN is scheduled to speak at the Friday night meet and greet. The 2012 convention is scheduled for Reno, Nevada. We are looking for a chapter or chapters to step up and apply to host our convention in the year 2013. You should start planning very soon. It takes longer than you think, and time really does fly. QCWA in the 21st Century. On December 15th, we turned on the process to allow the ability to process membership applications online. Payment will be called or faxed in, or a check can be mailed. A 7-day business window has been decided on as adequate to allow for the funds to arrive, with reminder email set at 3 and 6 days. More information and the online forms are available at the following website, http://www.qcwa.org/how-to-join.php. We have had 14 online applications submitted by December 31st. It's a strange situation where one of the first duties to be performed is to appoint people to find your replacement. I have made appointments to the nominating committee for the 2012 election. More information will be coming in future issues of the Journal and on the QCWA website. A little history. Our logo was developed from a cartoon in a 1923 QST accompanying an article, Rotten QRM, written by the old man himself, Hiram Percy Maxim. Otto Eppers, W2EA, a commercial artist, made some minor modifications to the drawing, added some sparks and the letters QCWA, and the QCWA logo was born. Every few years, someone brings to our attention the fact that the pipe smoker is not politically correct, and they are correct. Smoking isn't good for you or the people around you. However, I doubt that our logo will inspire anyone to start smoking, just as removing the pipe from our logo will not sway anyone to stop. We have requested a forum, time slot, and date again this year. As is typical, we'll probably have Sunday morning again. This isn't bad if you know about it in advance. Now you know. If you're not hanging around until Sunday, stop by our booth anytime Friday or Saturday and say hello. Don't forget the Spring QSO party on April 2nd and 3rd. Feel free to operate any or all of the four categories, CW, Phone, Mixed, and CQ100. See you on the air. The President's Report is signed 73DE and 0UF, Op, Bob Ruski, TU, QCWA President. At the bottom of this page, there's a thank you. Tad Berrick, K3QC, a member from Florida, is a volunteer puppy raiser for the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind Incorporated. This is a nonprofit group whose goal is to provide dogs to support blind and others with disabilities. The organization has just announced a new partnership with the Massachusetts Department of Corrections to place puppies in correctional institutions. The foundation is, however, in need of additional individuals to help raise the puppies until they are ready for full training. While this addresses the needs in Massachusetts, the organization is always in need of support nationwide. If you are interested, check the foundation's webpage at http://www.guidedog.org. This is a very worthwhile program. The Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated was founded December 5, 1947 as a non-commercial association of radio amateurs organized for the promotion of interest in amateur radio communication and experimentation for the establishment and advancement of the radio art and of the public welfare. QCWA is an incorporated association without capital stock, chartered under the laws of the state of New York, and is a tax-exempt 501c3 organization under the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. Its affairs are governed by a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and a board of directors whose voting members are elected every 2 years by the general membership. In order to qualify for membership in QCWA, one must have demonstrable proof of having been first licensed as an amateur radio operator at least 25 years prior to application for membership and must be currently licensed. Membership inquiries and general correspondence should be sent to the business office address at P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, 01705. Let's go now to the General Manager's Report. The General Manager, Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. It's for the spring of 2011. Dayton Hamvention 2011. We will be requesting the same booth as we had in 2010. That's booth number 325. It is best to check the program to confirm our location. A report by the board to the members will be presented at a membership meeting on Sunday morning. Again, we suggest that you check the booth for exact time and location. Be sure to stop at the booth, sign in, and have an eyeball, QSO, with a member of the staff. If you have never treated yourself to the Dayton Hamvention experience, pack a bag and join in the fun. Chapter 9 QCWA Banquet. Chapter 9 will host the HamFest QCWA Banquet on Friday evening the 20th. The program will be a presentation by Richard Black on My Life as an Artist. The banquet will be held at the Holiday Inn, Dayton Airport, corner of North Main Street and I-70, at 7:30 p.m. Reservations need to be made by May 10th. Send your check for $25 per person, made out to Chapter 9, to the following individual: Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, Raglund, R-A-G-L-U-N-D, 409 Park Avenue, Franklin, Ohio, 454005. Jerry Raglund's call is W-A-A-B-O-B. At this point, I want to slow down just for a while and explain something about the Journal Mail label. During the year, I receive phone and email requests asking about membership expiration dates. All that and more is part of the label on each issue of the journal. Below is a sample of the label with the various items identified. If you can visualize this, it shows a label. Obviously, it's blank. The very top of the five lines on this illustration begins in the upper left corner with the chapter number, the member number, the expiration date with the MM/DD/YY, month, date, year, and then the life, if it's a life membership, and the last two digits on that is first license. The second line has the entire name, followed by the call sign. The third line is the postal mailing address. The fourth line is the city with the state in two letters and a zip code. And the bottom line of the illustration has the country. And one further comment about the label. Most of you by now, if you receive this in the mail and are not sight impaired, seeing the label, you realize that it's been changed in its location. It's on the front cover in the bottom left corner. And when you look at it, it's actually upside down to your point of view. But that's the regulation that was recently put in place by the United States Postal Service, who is now using automatic scanning equipment to process the mail more efficiently. With regard to chapter reports, a big thank you to all the chapter secretaries for returning the chapter reports. This form certifies your chapter charter for another year. Information on the form is used to prepare the annual list of active chapters provided to each new member and also posted on the webpage. Jan and I hope all the members enjoyed a great holiday season. We look forward to seeing old and new friends at Dayton. Have a safe trip. 73 Chuck K1IGD, General Manager. And before we go much further, we have a correction for the previous issue, the Winter 2010 issue. With reference to page 25, Chapter Reports, Chapter 126, Piedmont, North Carolina. Both pictures have the wrong call sign. The correct call for Bob Saunders is W2IKN, not W2ITN. Sorry about that, Bob. Adjoining the general manager's report is a commentary by Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. His comments go as follows. The Courage Center Handyham system provides tools for people with disabilities to learn amateur radio and technological skills and earn their amateur radio license. By working through the process of earning an amateur radio license, the members become familiar with setting goals and following a plan to achieve them. Much of their training occurs through summer camps run by Handy Hams and supported by very dedicated volunteers. Handy Hams is part of the Courage Center, a non-profit rehabilitation and resource center that advances the lives of children and adults experiencing barriers to health and independence. One thing that has remained a vital part of amateur radio and the Handy Ham system is the community spirit that exists, the spirit of helping each other and learning new things together. As people age, they may need to accommodate disabilities that include reading the display on a radio. Handy Ham's goal is to help people with disabilities stay active in amateur radio when life presents difficult choices. QCWA's involvement with Handy Ham's started in the 1970s as a program to provide our sight-impaired members a way to participate in QCWA through an audio version of the QCWA Journal. The original director of that activity was Blanche Randall's, called K4GXZ, and the first reader was Father Tom Carton, K1PZU. To distribute those recordings, QCWA partnered with the original Handy Hams organization, which at the time was supplying various audio tapes to sight-impaired hams. As technology has advanced, tapes are no longer provided. Vic Culver, called W4VIC, now directs our journal program. The journal is read by Robert Zeta, N1BLF, who reads for a number of organizations. Audio CDs are provided to 6 members while others use an audio download from the QCWA webpage. At a recent Yankee chapter meeting, our program presented by Phil Temples, K9HI, was a video prepared by hams who are members of the Handy Ham program. Phil is one of the volunteers working with the program. The video presents a very inspiring story, showing the enthusiasm and drive of these young and old people who were determined to overcome various disabilities and learn the technical and operating aspects of ham radio. The video was taken at the summer camp run by the Handy Hams organization. A copy of this video DVD is available from the office at no charge. If a member of your chapter needs an audio copy of the journal, contact Vic Culver at vic@w4vic.com for further information. QCWA donates funds yearly in support of this program. I personally encourage chapters, after viewing the video, to consider their own contribution to the Handy Hams program. Further information about the Courage Center and Handy Ham system is available at http://handiham.org. Handy Ham is always spelled one word, handiham. This commentary about the Handy Hams program and QCWA was supplied by Charles Wallbridge, K1IGD, General Manager. On page 8, there are the rules for the 55th Annual Spring and Fall QCWA QSO Parties for the year 2011. It's a lot of detail, a lot of facts and figures, frequencies and such as that, starting frequencies, times, informational exchanges and such. However, with regard to this reading for the spring of 2011, the QSO Party actually starts, I think, the day after tomorrow. And because there's a process of recording this, which I'm doing, and then getting it to the Handy Hams, and then putting it on the website for the QCWA, it's not going to be ready for you in time if you are one of those print-impaired individuals. We apologize for that. The manager responsible for the magazine itself, the journal, is working diligently in order to coordinate in a more efficient manner information and articles to be submitted for print consideration. So it's really important that the members of the organization, when they come up with some interesting facts or stories or whatever is pertinent to amateur radio and to the association, you should get them to us so we can consider putting them in the next available journal slot. And then we get to the Rules and Regs Digest. The author here is John B. Johnston, W3BE. John's dedication to the service of the hams in the QCWA and to the amateur community is remarkable, and it's very long-lived. I wish him very, very good health and well-being to continue this effort. it has a lot of questions to be asked and answers to those questions with respect to his knowledge of the technical aspects and the licensing information about rules and regulations for the digest. It's reported here from page 10 through page 12, and actually 13, because there's actually a picture of this good man with his wife, Betty Johnson. Her call is N3PKX. They were caught with a big smile on their face attending the impromptu August QCWA Seafood Luncheon in Bath, Maine. I have to tell you, that's a nice place to enjoy a luncheon. We're not too far from Bath, Maine, way up there in the northeastern corner of our great United States. I'm located down here in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, on Buzzards Bay, just before you get into Cape Cod. So we're still a bit of a ride, probably 150 miles, but it's always great to go up there, especially up Route 1A, and look at the wonderful historic locations in Maine. Well, it's time to tackle the chapter reports. We'll start with Chapter 8, Minneapolis, Minnesota. At our November meeting, 20 members and guests enjoyed Neil Weingard, W0VLZ's program. It's titled, Two Crappy Poles and Some Wire. In December, we once again held our annual holiday party. With no business meeting or program, gifts were exchanged and eyeball QSOs were the order of the day. Minneapolis finished December with 33.4 inches of snowfall, a new record, with 16 inches still on the ground. Such is life in Minnesota. That was submitted by Bob Roski and Zira UF, Secretary for Chapter 8. Now we leap forward to Chapter 65, Niagara, New York. The Chapter 65 Board of Directors resolved another leadership void after receiving the resignation of WA2ARA, who had once again been serving as chapter president. With the VP spot vacant, the three-man board met in urgent session and elected Bill Klepser, WB2AIV, as president, and Steve Litch, WF2S, as vice president for the duration of the currently running three-year terms. WB2AIV agreed to stay on as treasurer with increased help from secretary W2AET. Peter Laros, a K2RSK, agreed to join the chapter board of directors and was duly elected. The new board immediately drew up and executed plans for a December Christmas party at which about 22 persons attended. Small holiday gifts were distributed, and K2RSK donated complimentary hot dog coupons for Ted's Hot Dog. Also approved for action was a chapter-sponsored field trip to the Antique Wireless Museum in late spring. WF2S is coordinating and may be contacted for further details if you wish to join the carpool or can serve as pilot for one of our caravan that will depart Buffalo with possible stops along the way. A chapter newsletter is to be reestablished and distributed by email. If you'd like to ensure receiving one, make sure your current email is current with W2AET. Those without internet will receive the newsletter by S-mail. At the November monthly meeting, members and guests heard W2AET detail with pictures and stories the history and current status of the legendary shore station, WCC. He recently visited at Chatham, Massachusetts. It reopened its doors this year as a museum, thanks to area radio buffs. W2AWCC is on the air from the site. Our Niagara Frontier chapter attempts to present interesting programs of a radio nature at about a quarter of our monthly luncheon meetings. If you have anything to offer, please contact W2AET. Among the programs scheduled for spring 2011 is The History of the Niagara Frontier Chapter QCWA, Photos, Personalities, and Reminiscences. Our chapter goes back to November 13, 1973, and has been in continuous operation ever since. At our December annual meeting, W2AIV, was elected trustee of the chapter station called W2SD. Early discussions were held on a possible home for the station equipped with donated vintage gear. Local Chapter 65 dues are now due for the three-year term ending December 2013. Please send your checks for $15 payable to Chapter Number 65 QCWA to Secretary W2AET at his call book QTH or at one of our monthly luncheon meetings, which are usually the second Saturday of every month at 12 noon at Brennan's Bowery Bar and Grill. You can transit there, Route 78, at Main Street, Route 5, just north of Thruway Exit 49. That was a very nice report submitted by Rob Rooney, W2AET, Secretary of Chapter 65, Niagara, New York. Our next report is across the border from Ontario, Canada, in Ottawa. Chapter 70, National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. With deepest regret, Chapter 70 reports the loss on November 17th of one of our best-known and best-liked members, Croft Taylor, VE3CT, by heart attack in hospital at Jacksonville, Florida, en route to his winter home. During the summer months, Croft was a regular attendee at our weekly breakfasts and at our quarterly dinners. For many years, he provided regular news updates on developments taking place at QCWA board meetings. During the quarter, we also lost Clay Hiltz, VE3TL. Clay joined the Royal Canadian Air Force, initially as radio operator. Later, he took radar training and served as a radar instructor at RCAF Station Clinton, Ontario, for most of the rest of his RCAF career. Clay passed away on November 8, 2010, at the age of 85 years. Pat Byers, VE3EUR, QCWA number 35310, joined Chapter 70 during the quarter. A fourth quarterly dinner meeting was held on November 16th. The meeting dealt with several important issues, including the annual financial report, the draft budget for 2011, and the nominations and election of officers for the coming year. Three members, the president, secretary, and one director, had expressed a desire to step down due to other heavy workload commitments. Unfortunately, our nominations committee, headed by past president Dave Parks, VE3AV, had to announce that he had not been able to come up with any volunteers willing to stand for nomination. In addition, no nominations were received from the floor. The search continues. Chapter 70 continues to be in good financial health, and we were able to announce a number of donations to worthwhile causes, including one to the QCWA Scholarship Fund. At the November meeting, our after-dinner speaker was Gregory Danyuchenko, VE3YTZ, who spoke about his experiences with software-defined radio. Also at the November dinner meeting, several longtime members were presented with certificates naming them as life members of Chapter 70 in appreciation of their many contributions to amateur radio. The Chapter 70 report was filed by Ken Pulfer, the E3PU secretary. Our report continues north of the border with Chapter 73, Fred Hammond in Ontario. Our fall meeting was held on 30 October 2010 at the Mohawk Inn in Campbellville, Ontario. We had two presentations. The first one was a short discussion and display by Larry Asp, VE3RF, of a rare Collins radio, 51J5, one of very few Collins products manufactured in Canada. This unit is on display at the Hammond Museum of Radio in Guelph, Ontario, and is shown in the accompanying photograph. Our main speaker was Keith Ballinger, VA3QF, who gave us a very interesting presentation of the subject of lightning protection as pertaining to amateur radio equipment. There were nominations and elections of some new members of our chapter executive position, which will be effective in 2011. These will be presented on our chapter website, www.qcwa.ca. Our next meeting will be 30 April 2011. Our speaker will be Bob Morton, VE3BFM, who will give us a presentation on VHF antennas. This report was filed by Keith Bentley, VE3DHL, Secretary Treasurer of Chapter 73, Fred Hammond, Ontario, Canada. Let's take a look now at Chapter 112, the Yankee chapter in Rhode Island. Our fall meeting was held on October 23, 2010 at the Yangtze River Restaurant in Littleton, Massachusetts. There were 14 members and guests present. We had the pleasure of having one of our own members, Phil Temples, K9HI, present the program Courage Center Handy Ham System. Phil has served as a Handy Ham volunteer instructor at the Handy Ham radio camps. He shared an inspiring video that describes Handy Hams from the perspective of the campers themselves. He shared his own experiences in the interacting with some of the finest human beings he has ever had the privilege of knowing. The Chapter 112 Christmas meeting was held at the Chateau Restaurant in Norton, Massachusetts on December 4, 2010. There were 24 members and guests present. Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, proposed that the Chapter 112 contribute $50 to the Memorial Scholarship Fund in memory of Chapter Silent Keys and $50 in memory of Croft Taylor, VE3CT. The contributions were seconded and approved. Skip WB6VVA ran the Yankee Swap Gift Exchange for the guys and gals. Our next meeting will be our winter meeting in February 2011. Time, date, and location to be determined. The Chapter 112 Yankee was filed by Janice K4IJK, Secretary. Let's check in with Chapter 146, Nutmeg, in Connecticut. The fall 2010 meeting and luncheon of the Nutmeg chapter was held at Tommy's Restaurant in Middletown, Connecticut on Saturday, November 13. Nearly 40 members and guests attended the quarterly gathering to enjoy the company of each other and to catch up on news and activities of our chapter. Nutmeg Chapter President Mike Schindler, K1AMS, was our featured speaker. Mike is a retired engineer from the Naval Undersea Warfare Center, and he drew upon his professional background and experience to explain, in an interesting manner, the basics of sonar systems used by submarines. That report was filed by Steve Ewald, WV1X, Secretary. And Alberta Wild Rose, Chapter 151, has short commentary here. The executive members of Wild Rose, Chapter 151, wish everyone a happy, prosperous, and exciting new year. The next chapter meeting and luncheon will be April 2011. We thank Mitch Goodjohn, VE6SM Secretary, for the Chapter 151 Alberta Wild Rose Report. Our last requested chapter to be read is Chapter 160, Utah. It was with saddening hearts to learn in late December 2010 the passing of the wife of Don Smith, K7VN, of Orem, Utah. Mary Lynn, KD7KTM, was 66, and a wonderful wife, mother, and grandmother. Our condolences go out to Don at this time. Keith B. Anderson, Red Anderson, W7LQU, member number 22479, of Rigby, Idaho, died on Tuesday, November 23, 2010. He was 84. Was born on July 7, 1927, in Murray, Utah. After he graduated from high school, he went to work for the Union Pacific Railroad Company as a depot agent. He retired in 1986. He was devoted to amateur radio for over 50 years, with a call sign of W7LQU. He provided civil defense assistance during the Teton Dam flood of 1976. He was a member of the ARRL, Morse Telegraph Club Incorporated, and the QCWA. Bill Moyes, N7IE, wrote of Red, quoting, "When I was about 10 years old, I ran across an article on a man named Samuel F.B. Morse, along with the listing of the code and the diagram on how to make a telegraph. I talked my father into funding a dry cell battery and some doorbell wire. A bit later, I had a working telegraph. My dad, seeing an interest, asked if I would like to see a real telegraph. Boy, would I. He made arrangements for me to go down to the Union Pacific Depot on the Saturday. It was there that I met Keith, the station agent. Keith and his family lived in the depot. After showing me the telegraph, he took me into another room filled floor to ceiling with black boxes. On his desk was a little white plastic sign that read, "Danger, 50,000 ohms, high gain antennas," with a call sign W7LQU atop the danger. That was my introduction to ham radio. I always stayed in touch with Keith. What a way to be introduced to a hobby, a military specialty, and a career in public safety telecommunications. I bet all of us older hams had a friend, or as they call them, an Elmer, now that helped us into one of the hobbies. W7KOP Leonard Wood Woody 99 became a silent key on December 25, 2010. He was the oldest living scout and former member of our QCWA chapter. Our first 2011 activity will be held on April 5th in Mesquite, Nevada. Bring a snack to share for the picnic and pay for your own dinner. Make your reservations early and bring a friend or two. Visitors are welcome. Breakfast with Chapter 160 members are held on the first and third Thursdays at the Denny's Restaurant in St. George, Utah. And we thank Dave Rabb, W7DKR, president, for the Chapter 160 report. And I might add also that the photograph of Ken B. Anderson, Silent Key, is also included with this report. This concludes our chapter reports for the spring issue of 2011 of the QCWA Journal. Another suggestion and recommendation, heartily felt by the directorship of the organization, is that more clubs should report more frequently their activities so that their print or otherwise impaired individuals who cannot read the material or have no connection to the Internet can be given the privilege and the courtesy of getting information directly keyed to them, as these reports have been just now read. I thank you for that consideration also. Let's take a look now at the Quarter Century Wireless Association Convention news regarding the next convention in Warwick, Rhode Island. Warwick is actually a suburb of Providence, Rhode Island. It'll be at the Crown Plaza at the Crossing, September 9 through 11, 2011. The Headquarters Hotel, Crown Plaza at the Crossing, 801 Greenwich Avenue, Warwick, Rhode Island, 02886. A block of rooms are being held for this convention at the rate of $109 plus tax, which is currently 13% in Rhode Island. For reservations, please call the hotel number at 1-800-227-6963 and mention the QCWA 2011 convention for this special $109 plus the tax, of course, rate. They will start taking reservations on October 15, 2010. Now, regarding the rail and air travel, there are at least six northeast corridor trains daily from Amtrak, both northbound and southbound, which run through Providence. The Amtrak depot is 15 minutes from the Crown Plaza. There are a multitude of activities being programmed and planned, informational, entertaining presentations, and seminars on Friday and Saturday. There'll be more details forthcoming in the next issue of the QCWA Journal for summer. And being New England, there are a lot of things to see in the summertime, so we are planning a lot of very fine tours, one of which, I must say, is to the place that's pictured on the cover of the QCWA Journal for this issue, the New England Wireless and Steam Museum. It's only a short ride down Interstate 95, still in Rhode Island, just before you get to the state of Connecticut and heading south. You should enjoy this venue and the New England atmosphere very, very nicely. Plan to join us at the September 9 through 11 Quarter Century Wireless Association Convention in Warwick, Rhode Island. This issue carries the CUSO party results from the September 2010 party for the QCWA. I'll just give you some pertinent information about the winners. The highest score for CW Digital was a call AA5KV, John Stewart, Shreveport, Louisiana, from Chapter 85. The highest score for phone was Kraft Taylor, Victor Echo 3, Charlie Tango, VE3CT, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, Chapter 70. May he rest in peace. Croft is now a silent key. And the highest score for mixed was WA6KHK, Frank Romano Jr., Menifee, California, California Chapter. And here's a commentary with regard to the CUSO party results and other information. As I write this summary of another year of QCWA's CUSO parties, it is just 1 week before Christmas 2010. The deadline for the QCWA 2010 Spring Journal, which we're now reading, is 2 weeks away, and with a little luck, you will be reading this in March, April of the new year 2011, and indeed we are. The next CUSO party will be just about to begin, or will be over. That is to say, referencing April, I believe. 55 years of QCWA, CUSO parties will have begun. 2010 has not been a good year for this activity. In the fall 2010 journal issue, I had noted that in the last 10 years, the number of logs submitted had dropped to a low of 101 in the year 2008. This year, the HF logs submitted, excluding W2MM, was 99. The number of contacts for these logs is just below 1,000. On the new CUSO net activity on the internet, W2MM worked 14 stations, but only one log was submitted, so there was no competition. The ARRL has been promoting each U.S. state having a CUSO party, with the result that there is much more competition on every weekend. Our usual weekend of April 9 through 10 now also supports the Montana and Georgia CUSO parties. We have moved to April 2 and 3, where we only compete with the Missouri CUSO party. This year, we have eliminated the rules pertaining to working another member in your own chapter and the 50-mile distance rule for working headquarters station W2MM. Thanks to those who responded to my query re-eliminating these restrictions, they also suggested that we move our CUSO party hours from Saturday, Sunday to Sunday, Monday, on the basis that a larger number of our members would be able to CUSO on Monday, as they were retired, and it would alleviate the competition problem. Or, instead of a 24-hour period, reduce the hours to 2 8-hour periods, which would concentrate the number of participating stations on the air during the contest. Let me know your feelings. I am also grieving the loss of a good friend and a valuable member of QCWA, Croft Taylor, VE3CT, who passed away on November 17, 2010. Croft has served our organization very well for many years and was a very active participant and certificate winner in our CUSO parties. He also served for many years as a standby net control station for the Sunday afternoon QCWA SSB net. It was sobering to receive the last results from Bob Boos and find Croft once again held top place in the phone category. The activities manager, George Roach, VE3BNO, submitted this information. His email is groach@storm.ca. His telephone number, area 613-234-0885. His mailing address, 104 Strathcona Avenue, Ottawa, Ontario, K1S1X6, Canada. Thank you very much, George, for your reporting. Next, I have an article here by Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO. Larry titles this piece Publicity, Public Relations, and the Lost Member Column. Last November, I had the great pleasure of meeting and presenting two QCWA longevity license certificates to Andrew Ben Letson, W4BT, in his home. Ben, 96, has held a ham ticket continuously the past 78 years and moved to St. Petersburg, Florida from the greater Montgomery, Alabama area a few years ago. I had hoped to make the presentation at the St. Petersburg chapter picnic, but I could not confirm that the picnic would occur. So I called Ben, met him at his apartment where his 50th anniversary of licensing and Century Club certificates were given and received in a two-person presentation. The included picture of this event was obtained via the self-timer option on my camera. Normally, the certificates are applied for by the chapter secretary and presented at the future chapter meeting. Slip-ups do happen, and chapters miss the eligibility dates for some of their members. And members at large, those without a chapter, usually need to ask for their own certificates. Please look in our journal on the back inside cover for member supplies listings. The certificate criterion is nicely explained. Nathan McRae, K9CPO, is a teacher in an 811-student elementary school in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who is trying to form and begin a radio club in his school. Nate is affiliated with the ARRL Education Department and was looking for a local radio club to sponsor and support his school's endeavor. An activity near and dear to me, I offered to share a 32-slide program developed by Ken Mugley, K0HL, to elicit the interests of school, board, and PTA in possible career paths for their young charges. According to Ken, quoting, "Schools prepare children for careers. The school could care less about ham radio. Schools could care less about ham radio. Schools do not care a great deal about providing children different career paths. My approach is to try and sell the school on the idea of installing an electronics class as an elective. Part and parcel of the electronics class is a laboratory. We could suggest, indeed, a ham radio station. Sell a career path to electronics up front. Bring ham radio in the back door via the laboratory." I talked about this program in an earlier column, but the novelty of working with a younger group might get some parental involvement. What a wonderful opportunity for parents and elementary school children, both working to obtain their ham license. Would this not make for a great family working together project? I still think working with middle and high school students might reap the greatest benefits for amateur radio and careers in the world of electronics. But only time and the involvement we put into this endeavor will tell if this is a realistic approach. If anyone is interested and would like a copy of the slide program, please let me know and I'll mail it to you. Ken has graciously offered to share it with anyone interested. He only wants to know how and where you use it. With the late arrival date of the winter issue of the journal and the looming deadline date for the next quarter at hand, feedback on my questions from last quarter's column were sparse. However, the overall approach and content of the journal was thought to be great, but another method may be needed to track material coming in for publication, as some chapters' submissions have not been published. I do not know if these are just isolated incidents, and it has been suggested that we offer the journal online and perhaps digitize all the back journals and make them available on a DVD. And the last comments concerned our CUSO parties. A very nice concept, but something is needed to generate more member participation. The writer offered no suggestions. As always, I welcome your suggestions, comments, and criticism. I may be reached by email at wa9jmo@wi.net. That's the call sign, Whiskey Alpha 9, Juliet Mike Oscar, at wi.net, and or by telephone at area 262-639-7327. Signed, Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO. Well, I think it's time to go back and take a few random recollections of an old ham into consideration. The appendixes are journalistic history of the life and times in amateur radio of George Hart, W1NJM, by George Hart. This particular commentary is a continuation from the winter 2010 issue on page 39. The heading is The General Managers. The first general manager of ARRL was Arthur Hebert, 1ES slant, W1ES. But that was back in the very early stages before World War I, long before my time. Hibby, as we called him, was still at the headquarters as treasurer when I joined the staff in 1938, so I met him, and in the short time between then and his death, I grew to like him very much. The first paid secretary was Kenneth B. Warner, 1EH slant W1EH. KB came aboard in 1919 and rapidly gained stature until by the mid-20s he was the managing secretary of ARRL and retained that title until World War II. After which, although he remained secretary and editor of QSD, his principal function and title were that of general manager. KB retained this position until his death in 1948 and was succeeded by A.L. Budlong, W1JFN, later W1BUD. He was KB's understudy for quite a few years and must have been doing a satisfactory job or he wouldn't have lasted. When KB passed away, it seemed quite natural that he should take over, but from the very start it became quite evident that he disliked Handy and wasn't too crazy about me, either. In 1948, my status in the CW was fairly low on the totem pole, with Joe Muskie over me and Al Hayes and Al Hill at least my equal in the department's pecking order, although I was senior to all three of them in age, in amateur radio's experience, and in the department. First Al Hill left, then Al, we called him Doc Hayes, and my status and workload improved. When Joe Muskie got himself transferred to the circulation department, presumably for more money, I became the number two man in the communications department. I outlasted them all, even eventually, at Handy when he retired with honor in 1967. But that's getting ahead of the story. Budlong apparently inherited some of the prestige that had been KB Warner's, succeeded in downgrading Handy and gradually making himself unpopular with the headquarters through his demanding and peremptory demeanor. Nevertheless, he was a skillful manipulator and succeeded in maintaining his position until excessive drinking finally brought him down. Following a field trip partially in the company of my friend Director Harry Enwich, that's how I learned all about it, during which he disgraced himself and the league, a board of directors forced him to retire. Next time, we pick up the story with John Hutone, W1LVQ, later W1RW, as the general manager. So for this episode, that's part of the journalistic history of the life and times in amateur radio of George Hart. Now, for my listener, there is also a continuation of the My Radio Life article by Bill Tynan, W3XO. It was in the winter 2010 edition. I don't believe I read it to this recording, but if you're still interested in following it in print, you might check with another member of the QCWA who does get a copy of this magazine in print, and you can continue with that serialization also. And that basically applies also to Novice History, 1961. It's actually Article 13 in a series from the QCWA Journal, Novice Historical Society, by Cliff Cheng, Ph.D. Call AC6C. Both of these continuation pieces are quite long and rather tedious at times because of the many references made to individuals, call signs, locations, and so forth. But they are in published form if you choose to look at the journal itself. We are wrapping up now the spring 2011 issue. Before we do, however, Memorial Scholarship Fund. There are several listings here which I'd like to give credit to. Chapter 119, honoring Chapter Silent Keys. Chapter 202, honoring QCWA Silent Keys. Chapter 70, QCWA Silent Keys. Chapter 112, Chapter Silent Keys. And Chapter 112, honoring VE3CT. I'll finish up today on the lighter side with 2010 Crazy 2-Meter Antenna Contest, a great success, by Woody K3YV, Chapter 203, President. The Crazy Antenna Contest is a well-deserved name, and this year was no exception. There were four entrants, and all of them were great, wonderful, and crazy. So let's read what that's all about. Joe, called KA3GBC, entered a model railroad train antenna complete with miniature farm, barn, cows, and a working electric train that went round and round while the antenna was in use. The actual antenna was the barn's silo, and the wire on model telephone poles was the ground plane. Jim, called KB3TBX, had the HAAT antenna, that's height above average terrain antenna. Now we have all heard the term HAAT as used with antennas, but Jim gave us a new twist on the expression. Jim had a hard hat with a vertical antenna extending out of the top. The height above average terrain was the height of Jim's shoe heels. He brought several pairs of shoes for hat adjustment. I suppose Jim would do well in high heels, but I don't think we should go there. Mike, call N3LI, had the toilet antenna. Now, this was a moving experience. Mike brought in the real toilet complete with a split ring seat. In addition, Mike became part of the display. He was dressed as a burly redneck wearing a T-shirt with cut-off sleeves and a big old cigar. Mike set up the toilet, dropped his pants, at least he kept on his bright red drawers, and sat down for a crazy antenna chat. Hollywood could not have cast this better. The antenna was a dipole attached to the bottom of the seat. Vertical polarization when the seat is up, horizontal polarization when the seat is down. Obviously, gender has something to do with polarization. The winner this year, by the live applause-o-meter, was Greg. Call K3GEM with his Santa Barbara antenna. Everyone agreed that this was an uplifting experience. Greg had a life-size cardboard Santa Claus. Now then, Santa was wearing a genuine underwire woman's undergarment. Yep, you guessed right. The underwire formed a dipole antenna. However, the antenna needed tuning, so various items were loaded into the dual pockets until the SWR was properly adjusted. Correct tuning was achieved by loading the antenna with a pair of cantaloupes. The antenna worked well, but the Santa was sagging a little. All of our antenna entries this year were great, and all of them were winners for sure. The presentations were excellent, everyone was greatly entertained, and the antennas were definitely crazy. A very special thank you and well done to each of our entrants. All of them did a lot of work and deserve many attaboys. Thanks, guys. I can't wait until next year. A P.S. Last year, among others, we had the pizza antenna, the Jell-O antenna, and the miniature bent-over gnome antenna with a rubber ducky sticking out from you-know-where. Honest, you can't make this up. Anyway, the Jell-O antenna won by a wiggle. Well, folks, I guess Woody didn't disappoint us again this year. K3YV Chapter 203 President always comes up with some really funny, good antenna situations, and he didn't lay down on the job this time either. Hi. Well, that about takes care of our reading for the QCWA Journal for the spring of 2011. I thank you all very much for listening along with me, and I hope that as time goes by, more of you will submit information, especially those in the membership clubs that can help to foster more interest in the journal itself, because the journal obviously is telling us that they need more material supplied by the membership. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System in cooperation with the Quarter Century Wireless Association. The Courage Handy Ham System is located at 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members and QCWA members only. Any otherwise may violate copyright laws. If you'd like to get in touch with the Courage Handy Ham System, you can call them at area 763-520-0512 or email them at the following address, handyham, that's one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, at courage.org. We have a very fine website as well. It's updated every single day of the year, www.handyham.org. Your reader, my name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My geographic location, QTH, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're about 50 miles south of Boston, right on Buzzards Bay. We sort of consider ourselves the entrance way to good old Cape Cod. Should be a lot of traffic coming by this QTH in another couple of months. If any of you folks have any kind of commentary, constructive or otherwise, I suppose, I'd be only too happy to hear from you. If you have email capabilities, my email is mycallsign n1blf@comcast.net. 73's Bob Zeta, N1BLF.